Okay, so give them the countdown.
I know, because we haven't started yet.
Okay.
So, as you see right here, we're connected to Block Talk.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, and don't click this.
Don't click that. That's right. That's just fine.
Ready?
And you're doing good. All right, so now we just have to give them the countdown, and on two, it's silent. Press the volume.
Okay.
Stream.
Okay, so I'm going to hit stream once we start counting down.
After two.
Stream and then that.
Volume and then stream. Okay, so it's like 5, 4, 3, 2.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's just like this.
When I'm supposed to zero, give me a hand like that, like zero.
Okay.
That's a start right there. Give me a hand to like that.
And then zero is when this becomes red.
Got it.
Okay. So when you're ready, Nate.
Okay. Do the countdown.
You do the countdown.
I'm going to be clicking. Okay. You can't see me. Can you see me?
Just say a lot.
No, I can see your left hand, though. Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome, everyone, to Freedom Law School's Freedom Hour on this February 6, 2020. This is Paymar Motahede, the founder and president of Freedom Law School, and your host for the Freedom Hour that I conduct for you every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time Zone, educating you about the law, the U.S. Constitution, your rights, and how to live free of oppressive taxation and control. In particular, I focus a lot on the income tax issue because income tax makes American people like you poor. It's thievery. It's stealing your money. You cannot afford good housing, good food, okay? A lot of things, and no savings. Why? Because your money is being robbed and stolen from you, I see, in violation of federal law and the Constitution. Tonight, I'm going to present to you part 4 of a series I've done on the question, is there a law that requires the average American, like you, to file and pay the federal income tax? Yes or no? We'll find out. And I will show you everything, as always, by referring to the actual documents, Supreme Court cases, the language of the U.S. Constitution, or the federal laws, codes, and statutes. And tonight I will focus on what does the U.S. Constitution say about the income tax issue? And what does the U.S. Supreme Court says about the income tax? Because after all, the U.S. Supreme Court is the legal authority that is supposed to properly and correctly interpret to help us understand the actual true meaning and application of the federal income tax. Now, before I get to that, folks, I want to remind you, folks, I'll be doing a seminar in Tampa, Florida, after 6 years of no seminars. I'll be doing one full-day seminar in Tampa on this leap year, February 29th, at Ramada Inn by the airport. So if you want to get a full day of this information, education, and answers, live with me and other like-minded freedom seekers like yourself, that's where you want to be. We already have registrations for as far away as Oregon and California. People flying in long distance to come and get this one-day seminar and understand what the problem is and what are the lawful solutions for you not to be robbed with income tax. And the American people as a whole, all of us, get rid of this misapplication of the income tax on the average American who does not legally owe the federal income tax. So, let's go to my screen, folks. I'm going to show you guys before we go on at livefreenow.org. If you want to come to this seminar on February 29th, folks, all you got to do is click down here on this star on the right side, the blue star, or the writing on the left, and that will take you to the flyer to print, mail, and send to Freedom Law School. It's only $200 prepaid, $250 at the door. We have limited seating, so don't wait till last minute. Expect to have room. Okay, so register right away. It includes a nice hot lunch, so you don't have to go looking for something to eat. We're going to have it right there, so we have more time to spend with you, give you quality information, education, and answers that actually work for you to live free. Moreover, anyone under age 30 is admitted free. Not 18, not 21, under age 30. Why? Because I know the average person that comes to these events is about 50 years old. So, do yourself an America favor. Bring your children, grandchildren, and nieces and nephews with you. That's what I'm telling you. We are going to support these young people who don't have a pot to pee in. They have no money. Let's educate them right now about this stuff. All they're going to do is pre-register, pay for the lunches that we have to pay for to the hotel, and they admit otherwise free of charge. So register early, and I look forward to meeting you all in person on 29th of February in Tampa. Okay, by the way, before I go on, I'll be gone next weekend. I mean, next week, to Acapulco, in Acapulco, Mexico. It's a great big freedom convention with about probably 5,000 people going to be there. So on Acapulco.com, you can still register and go there if you like. It's going to be about a six-day event, folks. Yes, from the 11th through the 16th of February in Acapulco, on Acapulco.com. And so I will be with you, but I'll have something special for you instead next Thursday evening. So, after the presentation, as always, I will answer your individual questions and concerns that you have. Okay? So, just hang in there, take good notes, and ask questions at the end of the presentation about the topic. If I do not do a perfect job, which I'm not perfect, so I'm open to your further questions about this and other freedom questions you may have. If the IRS is harassing you, state tax agency, any government agency is harassing you, Freedom Law School is here to help you understand what your rights are and the proper procedures to defend your rights, your money, your freedom. Okay? So, the question of income tax, when you ask the government about that, the IRS, they'll tell you the 16th Amendment of the Constitution give Congress to impose tax on the average American's labor and wages. That's what they say. And it was properly ratified, they claim, and that's how Congress got the power. Well, let's look at that, okay, for ourselves and understand what is the 16th Amendment anyways, okay? So here we go, folks. I've already got 16th Amendment text. You can find them easy, folks, on your search engine. Look it up, 16th Amendment. It comes up. What it says, actually, a text of 16th Amendment is this. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. What's all that gobbledygook about? You know, they say that, okay, Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes, okay, but from whatever source derived, okay, but without apportionment among the several states. What does that mean, apportionment? You know, when I first came across this in 1992, I thought, what's apportionment? Well, it basically means a portion, like cut up like a piece of a cake, you cut up and portion out. That's all that is. And you'll see why that's important in just a minute. I'll show you, okay? And then they talk about, and without any regard to any census or enumeration. How does census have anything to do with taxation. We'll come to that. You'll understand why the census or enumeration is actually relevant to taxing people directly. I went to the IRS's website, folks. Here it is, IRS.gov, an official website of the United States government at the top, it says, right? You see that? Okay. Facts and fiction are frivolous arguments, non-filer enforcement. This scary page they try to put on people, right? We won't go through the whole thing right now, but let's go through the relevant part of this page right now that says, when the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified, February 3rd, 1913, giving Congress the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes. Okay, citizens began arguing that it was not properly ratified and income taxes are illegal. But see, this is what they're already misrepresenting already. Some people, it was the non-ratification came out in 1980s with Bill Benson, who documented that. Okay, but the illegality is not correct. What it is that the Congress was not given new taxing power by the 16th Amendment. We'll come to that, okay? And I'm going to show you. What it is that Congress was not given any new powers of taxation. Not that 16th Amendment is illegal. Well, duh. Why would anybody say such a thing? But they deliberately change your argument to something else, the IRS, and to beat up this new argument that they claim you made that you never made, right? So what I've done here, folks, I've seen a lot of different articles about this issue, but the best, shortest article on this issue was one written by Pete Hendrickson, who is author of the book called The Lost Horizons. And LostHorizons.com is his website. He has this great article on his website, which I found to be the shortest, sweetest, to-the-point article on this issue. So thank you, Pete, for doing good work, my friend. I mean, he's got that from other people that came before him. So it's not like Pete came up with it by himself. We all learned from the previous generation. For example, it was Otto Skinner was the guy that really, in a big way, put this issue out in the 1980s. And I knew Otto Skinner way back then in the 1990s. He wrote a book, Defend if You're a Taxpayer. So anyhow, let's go to this article that Pete Jackson wrote. And this article, is you can look it up on the internet, Federal Income Tax Law in a Nutshell. So if you already search it and type in Federal Income Tax Law in a Nutshell, this four-page article will come up. It's really a nice nutshell. Now, the bottom of the first page one is on the bottom right, actually. Okay, so here it is. It gives you a very nice, or I'm going to go over this with you, very well written. It says, the United States Constitution forbids unapportioned direct taxes and is the only item in the Constitution that is stated twice. What does it say? Article 1, Section 2 says, direct taxes shall be apportioned among the states. That's right. Direct taxes, like folks, income taxes, direct. What's indirect tax? A tax on gasoline, for example. You can avoid that tax by not buying gasoline. You're right, there's a gas tax. Alcohol tax is indirect tax. Is a tax on the item. So if you don't want to do that, buy any alcohol, you won't pay the alcohol tax or tobacco tax. How about the activity? You know, there's a tax on sun tanning facilities in America. That activity of being a sun tanning salon has a special tax. That activity could be taxed. You don't want to pay that tax? No problem. Okay, don't own and operate a sun tanning operation, right? Otherwise, you pay the tax. So with the direct tax, you cannot escape. It's on you. About another example is bridge, a toll on a road or a bridge. You know, you don't want to pay that tax on a road, take a different road, right? Even a sales tax is indirect tax. Because technically speaking, you could live off your own land, have your own cows, chicken, food, and don't do any trade and pay no sales tax. Never buy anything from anybody. You might barter, but there's no sales tax for that. That's an exchange. So direct tax, you cannot escape. And income tax is a classic form of direct tax there is. It's on you directly. You pay this much, my friend. And the other person pays this much. You cannot escape it. It's on you directly. So let's go back to this reading. And it says, Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution says, no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census. Okay. What does all this mean? I'm going to go right now to the text in the Constitution and discuss this further. I looked at the Constitution, folks. You can do it yourself online. Here's one source that has it available, constitutionfacts.com. But there are others. You can go find it many places. But I highlight these parts because I want you to know that these things are not made up by me or Pete Hedrickson. These things are actually there. Here it is. Okay. In the Constitution, we talked about what? Article 1, Section 2, right, about direct taxes. Here we are, Article 1, right, Article 1, here we are, right here, right? And here's Section 3, actually, okay? Representatives and direct taxes. Direct taxes, folks, shall be apportioned among the several states. I mean, each state will share, pay its own share, a portion, divided up. Among the states which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers. So a bigger state with more people will pay more than the smaller state, right? So what that means is California will pay a lot more than Rhode Island or Delaware. So the tax is going to be, for example, $1 billion. You give up so much to California, so much to Texas, so much to Florida, this much to Alaska, this much to Rhode Island, this much to Delaware. It's a portion. And then the states themselves. The states will do the collection from their people and pay to the federal government. That's how the tax is apportioned. Otherwise, why portion up? Why divide up the tax in the first place? Today we have an income tax, which is completely direct from the federal government on each individual like you. There's no dividing up among the states, is there? See, we've gotten off track quite a bit, my friends. Okay. Let's continue, folks. And the other part we read about, no capitation or direct taxes. Let's go to Article 1, Section 9 and read that too. Here it is. Article 1, here it is. The same one we're reading. So I'm going to go down. Section 9, I already have it for you. I'll highlight it. It says, no capitation, which means direct. You know, ahead. That means it's a head tax. Head tax. You heard about to decapitate somebody, like to cut the head off? Well, cap means head. So a capitation tax means a head tax. Well, every human has one head, almost always. So it's tax per head, per person. So no head tax. No tax per person directly. That's what it's talking about, okay? That's what capitation is, okay? No capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration here and before directed to be taken. That's why census is taken every year. Enumeration means counting. Census is counting. Why they do that? Again, because how much California is going to pay? We got to take a census to see how many people live in California versus Florida versus Alaska or Wyoming. With the census, we can see how much is each state's share should be. The bigger states pay more, small states pay less. Right? That's what they're talking about. It was going to be done by the states by being divided up. Of course, we got away from that, sadly. And so that's what this is about. Let's go back to the presentation, folks. And direct taxes are upon a person's property, or the exercise of a fundamental right. Any tax on a person's labor or on the earnings from the labor is a direct tax. And there are several Supreme Court cases you can look up, folks, about it. You see right here, you know, this is Knowlton versus Moore in 1900 that says direct taxes bear or are imposed immediately upon persons upon the possession and enjoyment of rights. Okay. Here's other ones you can read later on. Okay. And again, Pete Henderson probably points out here that a portion and in a proportion to census means that the tax is billed to the state government according to each state's percentage of the national population. The states collect the tax according to state law and remit or send it over to the federal government. The federal government thus is prohibited from involving itself directly in the lives and finances of private citizens. This is unique to America, fundamental to keeping power in the hands of we the people, and is perhaps the key reason our economy was second to none during our first century and a half. I couldn't agree with Pete Henningsen anymore. He's right on the money on this, folks, okay? Let's continue. We'll move forward now from the late 1700s to 1913, the 16th Amendment. The government claims it gave it taxing powers, okay? The 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, ratified in 1913, does not address or repeal direct taxes. See, it does not repeal the direct taxes. That's important. You see, the IRS wants to give the impression that these limitations on direct taxation was taken away through the 16th Amendment. That is a big lie. We'll address that issue momentarily now. Instead, the 16th Amendment refers to something called incomes, right? So, incomes under the federal tax law lost its common everyday meaning and became a legal term via the Revenue Act of 1862, which sets forth federal license trades or occupations, federal employees, dividends from federal investment, and other federally privileged activities, and laid an excise upon those incomes. Therefore, income under the federal tax law is defined as receipts resulting from the exercise of federal privilege. In other words, federal income taxes are taxes on receipts that are taxable, not a tax on all receipts. The government wants to pretend that it's a tax on all receipts. That is not true. That is a fraud they try to tell people. Again, losshorizons.com is a website of Pete. You can find more on this issue further there. But let's go and talk about some other stuff about this issue. So the question comes, why the 16th Amendment? Okay, why was it passed? Well, the reason was because it was passed to close a loophole created by the case of Pollock versus Farmers and Loan Trusts. Well, whether it was a loophole or not, this is an 1895 case. Okay, and so what happened is that Mr. Pollock argued that the federal stock he had purchased was his personal property, and that taxing federal dividend from that stock was equivalent to taxing personal property, which was an apportioned direct tax prohibited under Article 1. What happened is that the Supreme Court agreed and struck those particular sections from the code. And the purpose of the 60th Amendment was to close this loophole and restore the Congress's power to tax federal dividends, even if those federal dividends were derived from personal property like dividends. Hence the term source derived. The source of the income was dividends, which before was not taxable. Now they want to tax the dividends that previously could not be taxed. Okay. Unfortunately, however, most people are taught that the 60th Amendment gave the federal government new taxing powers, eliminating the protection afforded by Article 1 of the Constitution. This teaching is blatantly incorrect. The Supreme Court has clearly stated numerous times that the 16th Amendment gave Congress no new taxing power. Folks, there's a bunch of them here. Okay, I'm just going to read two of them which are on point. The first one I'm going to mention is Bruce Shaver versus Union Pacific Railroad of 1916, said that in a very convoluted language. So, the court in the Stanton versus Baltic Mining Company in 1916 referred to the Bruce Shaver case and clarified it in a plain, easy to understand language, saying the provisions of the 16th Amendment conferred no new power of taxation. This was repeated in Peck versus Lowe decision in 1918, when the Supreme Court said the same thing in a different words, that the 16th Amendment does not extend the taxing power to new or accepted subjects, people that were not covered or imposed, the law was not imposed on them to begin with. So, folks, it's very clear. The 16th Amendment did not give Congress any new taxing powers. Period. End of story. It did not get rid of the Constitution, those parts that said that direct taxes must be apportioned among the several states. Now you know why the Constitution requires a census. How many people live in a household? So it could be taxed properly. How much each state must collect from its own people. And each state, then they divide up that within a state, different counties, and they based on the population or region of the state, how much tax to collect. Now, you'll like this one. My good friend, Vlad, he sent me very recently a photocopy of the very first federal tax law, okay, direct tax of 1798. Yes, it was actually a direct income tax law in 1798. I'm going to put it on my screen. You know, can I make it too much bigger? I'm going to see if I'm making it bigger for you guys, folks. If I can do that, I will do so. Let me see if I can do that for you a little bit bigger. But I'm not sure if I can. Well, here it is. We're going to go to the screen. You're going to see it. Okay? Oops, let me see how I fix this thing here for you. Hold on, let me try it again. Okay, here we go. What you see here, folks, is from the National Archives microfilm publications. Okay, this is actually in the archives found by somebody. And it says, United States direct tax of 1798, tax list for the state of Pennsylvania. How do you like that? Tax list for the state of Pennsylvania? For the United States direct tax? It was done before, and this is what how it was supposed to be done and was done. And it was from the National Archives in D.C. in 1963. Right? So here it is, folks. It's a little bit. Let me see if I can make this bigger for you guys. I think I can do that. So give me a second how we make that bigger. Zoom in. Here we go. Yeah, I think I can zoom in on that a little bit. Here we go. I think I found the answer. Zooming in, folks. You all can read it a lot easier, my friend. We're going to read this thing on the, starting at the top left of the page. Here we go. Yep, let's go to it. The top left of the page. Okay, here, we're almost there. One more time. Okay. Here it is. What does this say? This is the National Archives giving us a summary. They say on the 24 rolls of this microfilm publications are reproduced 717 volumes containing tax lists and related summary abstracts for Pennsylvania created under the Act of July 14, 98, 1 Stat 597. This is one of the first year laws passed by Congress. The first direct tax law of the U.S. government and under certain related acts. Okay? Now, here's interesting how that went about us, folks. The related acts include the one of July 9, 1798, which provided for the valuation of lands and dwelling houses and the enumeration of slaves. Okay? And it continues. The tax list showed names of persons who owned real property or slaves subject to direct taxes levied by the Act of July 4, 1798. Many lists show valuation of the properties, amounts of taxes assessed, and shows and some show amounts of taxes collected. Interesting, huh? Initial tax assessments were made with reference to October 1, 1798. So basically, folks, what this is, you'll see a little bit more, I'll show you. There was a direct act passed, direct tax enacted by Congress. And here they're telling you there's over 700 pages in the archives. This one is only for Pennsylvania. There was one from New York, Massachusetts, Georgia. All the 13 original states had this. And what they did is they had lists of people that owned property and taxed the people directly, you know, to pay the states. How was it done? Well, I'm just going to briefly show you kind of what they did, the lists, without getting too much into detail. Okay, so I'm going to make this a little bit smaller so we can follow it a little easier. We don't have it here. What happened here? I think we missed the, okay, my assistant forgot to put the entire thing on here and only put the second pages on there, two pages on this thing. Okay, well, folks, sorry about that. But in the all the detailed pages, is that's when you see the all of it, the rest of it. You know, they have all these lists of direct taxation by the states to give the federal government. See, that's how it was done. What happened is that butcher, which erroneously is labeled as one of the greatest presidents ever had, that drew sword on his own people, on American people, and created a war with the southern states, invaded southern states, burned the South, and murdered more Americans than Americans that died in World War I and World War II combined, when the population of America back in the 1860s was a fraction of the population of America in World War I and World War II. Abraham Lincoln. He was not a good guy. He was a tyrant, murderous man. He killed more Americans than anybody else in the history of America. So, in his lust for power over the Southern states, who had every right under the Constitution of the United States to leave the Union, they voluntarily came in. They could have voluntarily, as free people, left. Just like we had the Revolution, and we want to leave the British Empire, who did not represent American people's best interests. The Southern states, in the same manner, wanted to leave the Federal Union, had every right to do so. But he burned the South. He literally razed Atlanta to get military advantage, to weaken the South further. So what happened is he needed money to wage this war. And so because, you know, he could not force the Northern states, many of them did not really want to fight. And he couldn't rely and did not want to rely on the Northern states to fund the war effort. Lincoln started direct taxation of you, the American people, directly from the federal government. And by doing so, went completely against all these things, against direct taxation of American people. That law was created in 1862. 10 years later, it was allowed to lapse. Just a few years after the war of aggression against the South by Abraham Lincoln had ended. Nobody challenged it during times of war. Maybe they did. Lincoln ignored it. We don't know exactly. If anybody did challenge it in times of war, people usually do not challenge things. Or if you do, you often put in prison. And Lincoln did that too. He put a lot of people, illegally, Northerners even, in jail for not wanting to fight a war with their Southern brothers and sisters. So that created a precedent of direct taxation by the federal government, which should have never happened. That's why we're not doing things the way we're supposed to be. Okay? But the bottom line is, IRS has been lying to the American people. The 16th Amendment did not give Congress new taxing powers. Let me show you again what the IRS wants to say. What the IRS says, let's go back to it, okay? They say when the 16th Amendment of the Constitution was ratified, giving Congress the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes. See, that's it. Congress got the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes. But you see, this was the term income had a very limited meaning. It was a tax on profits, on privileges, okay? And you find out more in this article by Pete Henningsen. He talks about it a little bit more here, okay? And what it says, for example, here in this case of Southern Pacific versus Lowe in 1918, he says that we must reject the broad contention submitted in behalf of government that all receipts, everything that comes in, are income. See, that's what the government's saying. That everything that comes in that you get is income. It's not. All receipts you receive for a living are not income. In fact, this is Morse Hubbard, who was the Treasury Department legislative draftsman. He's a law writer for the Congress, for the House Congressional Record. He said this in 1943, that the income tax is an excise or privilege tax with respect to certain, that means specific, activities and privileges. The income is not the subject of the tax. Okay. For example, if you have business as a sole proprietorship, you go out and sell food and it poisons and kills people, you would be liable or responsible for killing people with the bad food you gave them, and it could come sue you, his family members, the victim's family members, take your home, car, planes, everything you got. However, if you serve food as a corporation like McDonald's, let's say, here's you, and here's you own this corporation, McDonald's. Okay, you own McDonald's, but if McDonald's go and gives you bad food, makes you sick and die, you can only sue and take the assets of McDonald's, this fictional entity make-believe called McDonald's, but not its owner. The owner that really owns it, you cannot take his stuff at all. His home, car, planes, everything else he owns is secure and safe. You get only what's in that business. So yeah, if you have a restaurant business, compare that as a sole proprietor. If you, again, hurt someone with your food, poison them, they can take all your stuff. Your homes, cars, planes, everything. But if that restaurant is a corporation, they can only sue and take the restaurant and its equipment and everything else it owns. That's it, not your personal property. Well, that's a privilege to not be responsible for your actions fully as you should be. Freedom comes with responsibility. There are two sides of the same coin. So that could be taxed. But how do you tax a huge corporation like McDonald's versus a local mom and pop corporation? Well, the more money they make, that means they're doing more activity out there that potentially can injure or hurt people. So the more exercising this privilege, and the more we should tax them. So small mom and pop corporation pays a little bit. We use that income as a measure of their activity as a protected activity from lawsuits, which we want to tax that. But McDonald's would be a lot, huge amount of activity. The income is a lot more. We tax them a lot more. So the income is a way to measure how much of this taxable privilege activity the corporation is involved in. Now, the other thing I want to add to this is this. With this, if we stuck even to this, the federal government, there was a problem. They cannot tax the average man's labor. And, you know, how many people make money from dividends, for example, you know, stocks or real estate? So Congress, what they wanted to do in the 1930s, the Franklin Roosevelt, that treacherous president, second worst after Lincoln was Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt in 1930s. He was the banker's agent of Wall Street. He was one of the lawyers. He pretended to be against the banks. He was their agent. He stole our gold in the Great Depression that the banks just created. And what he did, he was going to turn America into a big socialist commune, as he was told to do by the banksters. So what he did is he wrote the law in a way, I covered this last week, to apply only to Washington, D.C. and U.S. territories, which are not limited by the federal government taxing powers. These are restrictions I just read to you today. They don't apply to Washington, D.C. or in any territories of the United States government. The revenue laws, tax law restrictions of the Constitution do not apply to those territories. In a case called Downs versus Bidwell, which in 1901, which I covered last part three of this series, I went into this in more detail. You should watch it. They use that theory that we could tax whatever we want, any way we want in D.C. I wrote the law for D.C. only. This way, they avoided all these problems of taxing and what does income mean. Income is not. They could be accused of taking money illegally. You know, so they wrote the law legally correct, but they didn't tell you that the law was made only applicable in D.C. They used the word United States, and you thought the word United States means the 50 states. And last week I covered this issue in part three, how the word United States used the Internal Revenue Code is primarily Washington, D.C. Alaska, Hawaii, where territories were included in that definition, they were removed soon after they became states. So you got to watch that. So the reason I'm bringing this up, folks, because tonight's presentation, a lot of people talk about that. And they still say that, well, the government's taxing privileges. Well, they could try tax privileges, but they chose not to do that. Because to enslave the masses, they just write the entire law, even corporate law, for corporations that are based in Washington, D.C. Okay? That's all in the definitions. The problem was the average American did not have the ability to go look up the laws for themselves to see how they were hoodwinked. Here, you can do that. I'm going to show you, for example, on my screen. Well, again, if you've not seen this before, you can look up all of this stuff for yourself. The Supreme Court case of Stanton versus Baltic Mining Company. We're going to look it up. Stanton space V period space Baltic Mining Company. Go on DuckDuckGo.com, not Google. Google's the enemy. Use DuckDuckGo.com and search for it, and it comes up multiple times. So I went down to this third one, SupremeJustia.com, and opened that link in the new tab. Here it is. I found Stanton versus Baltic Mining Company, 1916. And the realm of language is right here. I highlighted it for you. I got it for you. What did it say? It says, by the previous ruling in the Bushaber case they're talking about, it was settled that the provisions of the 16th Amendment conferred no new power of taxation. Okay, and you can read more about it, folks. You can read more. Read the whole court case. And you see earlier, it talks about the Bushaber case. See, here it is. The Bushaber case that we're talking about is listed here. Read it, folks. So I'm not misleading you guys, you know, giving you some false information like the IRS tries to say, oh, you're a tax protester, giving people wrong, people misleading them. You read the law, the Constitution, Supreme Court cases for yourself. All the other cases. Then that article by Pete Henningsen, look it up for yourself, folks. When you have a chance, read it. You're going to be verifying everything I'm telling you is the truth. So, we're done with this part four, folks, on the income tax by making it clear that the income tax cannot be imposed on the labor of the average American. So, the law was not written that way, deceptively. In 1930s, the Social Security tax was written for federal government employees. It came out of the Victory Tax 2 years in the middle of World War II, done the same way. But everybody else volunteered to pay, to contribute. You can voluntarily contribute. And by 1954, clearly in the code, actually last time, it was only applicable to Washington, D.C., to federal government workers and foreigners. So let's go to your questions, folks. If you have folks, the call number to ask a question is area code 657. What's the call number? Call number, guys. We don't have it here. You gotta give me the call number for everybody to call, ask questions. Okay? And what I'm going to do, folks, write it down, folks, for me, please. I'm going to pass out everybody the call number. One moment, folks. Now, you see it on your screen, of course, the number also, 657 area code number. Call that number and push for your telephone keypad if you have any questions, folks. That's what it's there for. I'm going to answer your questions about this particular topic and any other question that you may have. Until I get your live questions, 657-383-1755. Let's go to some of your questions and comments on YouTube. Okay. David James Rodriguez, I look forward to seeing you, my friend, on Acapulco as well, and in Tampa, my friend. Okay. Yes, Jessica, it's a leap year, February 29th. That is very true. Yep. Let's see what we got. Now, Santana says, what about taxes you have already filed? Well, I recommend that you leave it alone, because to try to get the money back that's been stolen is going to be a lot more work, hassle, and risky. I did that for my 1992 taxes based on a friend's advice that he claimed he knew what he was doing. He didn't, but I was newbie like you. So the IRS rejected my tax return as a California state citizen, a non-resident alien of Washington, D.C., and they came after me for 1992, 1993, and 1994. And with the tax court, it was a long, whole hassle. The court and the judge ignored the law and the facts, and the court of appeal did the same thing. They renewed the tax after 10 years. They made it on me and went away anyhow, harmless. But it was a lot of work. What for? Because I invited trouble by getting greedy. $600, that's all it was. I was poor, so $600 was a lot of money to me back then, single young guy. Really was. So I didn't know better. I trusted my friend also, combination of things. So I recommend you generally just forget about that and move forward. You have decades in front of you, my friend. Santana, I look forward to working with you, my friend, helping you be free, okay, to the future. You can revoke them, Jessica, if you want to, but if they come after you, know that you egged it on. You brought it up yourself. Let's see. Let's see what other commentary we have. And so Santana says that he's heard that it's the W-2 that makes you volunteer and not filing, but using federal forms. Well, no, the W-4 is a form that allows your employer to steal money from your paycheck and give it to the IRS. You don't have to fill it out by law. The problem is the employers in this country have been duped and deceived and coerced so that you must get a W-4 from everybody that works with you, otherwise we will not hire you. You cannot hire anybody. That's the problem. Okay? All right, let's see. Jessica, you say U.S. citizen, a slave of the U.S. corporation. Well, depending on what you mean by U.S. citizen, okay? U.S. citizen, not in the 14th Amendment, but in that clear distinct way of the Internal Revenue Code. By the way, folks, right now, Blog Talk Radio is not working for some reason. We're going to try to make it work again. So if you want, you can put your question on our YouTube channel. We answer it for you that way. But once we get Blog Talk hopefully working again, You can answer your questions that way as well orally. Okay. Mr. T says that he just opened option land to a company for a few years. They pay him until they buy it or it expires. They're insisting that you fill out a W-9. You usually avoid that. I agree with you. You should avoid giving them a W-9 form because the W-9 form is for up to 1099 you. But 1099-ing is for people who are involved in trading and business, and those people 1099 others that they pay. But the only one, according to our Internal Revenue Code, who's involved in trade or business are people who perform functions of public office. I covered that 2 weeks ago in part two of this series, okay, on is there a law that requires the average American to file income tax. I covered this exact issue. So watch that. I did 2 weeks ago. And you if that will answer your question, and you see the laws, everything for yourself, it'll blow you away, my friend. Okay. Mr. T also asked, is it really required for them to require that of me in order for them to pay me? Of course not.